To the 20% True Podcast, Season 1, Modern Monsters, Episode 5, The Reaper. I'm Carolyn Rahman. As a content warning for this week, this episode deals with suicidal ideation. Please practice good self-care, and if you need to skip this one, that's fine. The show will be back next week with something more lighthearted. Claire saw the Reaper once on the subway. She had appeared in the blink of an eye, shrouded in a fine black robe with wide draping sleeves and a wide hood that pointed at the back of her head, and dipped so low in front that it covered all but her lips and chin, leaving those in shadow. People said that emerald green lined the inside of her robe, but only those she had reached for had seen it. The Reaper stood before an old woman with a walker parked before her. Liver spots splattered on her wrists and neck disappeared into a pink crocheted cardigan. Every occupant on the car had sucked in a breath and held it. Clara had tightened her grip on the stanchion, pulling her messenger bag closer to her chest. The Reaper lifted her hand, slender and brown and surprisingly youthful, nails neat and, according to rumor, skin soft and warm. Even the rumble of the train seemed to quiet. So they heard it as clear as a bell when the Reaper pressed a finger to the old woman's nose and gave her benediction. Boop! The fear in the old woman's eyes had dissolved, her shoulders relaxing and her eyes closing in peace. That was the gift of the Reaper, not just forewarning of your death, but granting an acceptance of it, a peace, a calm, relief from fear and anxiety. They said it was the most wonderful feeling, freeing. Within 24 hours, the old woman would be dead, but she'd go accepting of things she could not change after setting her affairs in order and showing her loved ones that she was unafraid. The Reaper had vanished, and the old woman had blinked open her eyes and smiled at the other passengers. She'd gotten off at the Monroe stop, and everyone had cleared a path for her to shuffle through, that smile still on her face. No one spoke for the rest of the ride, everyone shrouded in a contemplative hush. New passengers, who hadn't witnessed it, had boarded unencumbered, loud and oblivious to the mood of the car. But those that had felt it had held on to that feeling until they reached their various stops and dispersed back into their lives. Claire longed for that feeling, that peace and certainty in her fate, followed by a nothingness where she wouldn't have to struggle. She wouldn't have to deal with the absence of former friends, with doctors who couldn't soothe the gashes on her arms, with the frustration and helplessness, or with the police officer circling her car. She'd named the car Helen, and she had loved it. Still loved it. Still loved it even though she'd had to borrow money from her dad when she could no longer make payments. Even though they didn't speak of it, they both knew she'd never be able to pay back the loan. Even with that shame and her dad's disappointment looming in the front seat like the overbearing aroma of a pine-scented air freshener, she loved the car. She loved the car even with its two shattered windows, its smashed headlights, its cracked mirrors. There were tears in her eyes and glass on the street and a hateful word etched deep in the car's flank. The green paint peeled from the scrawled angular letters, curling back, shying away from the hate. Claire couldn't look away, the word burning into her retinas and then into her soul. The officer tore off a carbon copy of his report and pressed it into her numb fingers. "I'm sorry, miss, but there's usually not a lot we can do with vandalism crimes like this. There's no catching whoever did it." "Anita Walt," she said. Her voice must not have carried because the officer said, "What now?" "Anita Walt," she repeated. "She did this." The officer frowned. "You saw her do it?" Claire shoved her cold hands into the belly pocket of her frumpy hoodie, cradling the phone there into its home against her palm. "No."
"Then how do you know it was her?"
"It's always her." The officer's skepticism made Claire's heart sink with her shoulders. She grappled to get a hand back out of her pocket, to point at the expletive marring her car. "That's not exactly the most common swear word, and she calls me that all the time."
"Miss..."
The officer put away his notebook, making a point of buttoning his chest pocket after stowing it away inside.
Vandalism is rarely a premeditated crime. It's one of convenience, passing kids looking for a thrill, or one of passion. Now, if she'd left your apartment last night in a huff and saw your car sitting here...
He raised an eyebrow. Claire stuffed her hand back in her pocket, looking down at her feet.
Does she live around here?
No, she lives in Wrigleyville.
Wrigleyville's a long way to come to key someone's car. She work around here?
No.
The officer smiled, patronizing. Probably not your friend then. Just hooligans. Completely random, so it's nothing personal. It happens more than you'd think. Call your insurance agent. This is their kind of thing. They'll help you out.
She slumped to the ground as soon as the officer drove away, squatting on her heels to keep her butt off the ground, leaning back against her car and pulling her phone from her belly pocket. Over the last few days, it almost become part of her hand as she prayed for someone to comfort her. As she reached down and was slapped away and slapped away. Just before she'd called the police, she'd posted a photo of the damage. She checked the post again, hoping for the sympathy and support that the officer hadn't provided. 2 likes without comments. 1 wow reaction with the comment, "Did you key your own car?" Then a former friend. Someone who was a friend a month ago, before everything. Someone she'd hoped would come back to her. Those hopes smashed to pieces like her headlights. Someone wants attention. A friend of a friend followed the gut punch. You should really cover that. Children might see it. The tight knot of hope that had built in her throat before she checked fell to her gut, heavy and cold. She lowered her phone in a daze, turning to look at the first few letters of the vandalism. Yeah, she should cover it. She should sweep up the glass, too. It could pop someone's tire. People would care about that. The way they didn't care about her. They didn't care about her. No one cared about her. No one. No one would care if she died. They might even be better off. Yeah. Yeah. She'd cover the graffiti with a sheet, sweep up the glass, and go inside and be done with it all. Too much of whatever liquor she had left over from baking experiments, failed baking experiments, paired with whatever she had in her medicine cabinet. She was done. This was enough. Anita had won. A flare of dark fabric caused her to look up. She dropped her phone and scrambled to her feet, coming face to shadowed face with the Reaper. Relief flooded through her before she even felt the Reaper's touch. She was going to do it. It was going to work. This wasn't going to be another thing for her to fail at. A steady stream of tears washed her face. A burst of light and a burst of sound, and suddenly everything was at a different angle. She turned her head back to see the Reaper's hand held just so, flat as a fence and hovering near her opposite shoulder. Claire lifted a hand to her cheek, her fingertips setting off a secondary sting. The Reaper had slapped her. Slapped her across the face. She blinked wide eyes with the wild thought that maybe this was the new nose boop. She checked to see if she felt any different, and of course she did. After all, she'd just been slapped. The Reaper flicked her long sleeve back into place with a flash of emerald green and pointed a delicate finger toward Claire's face. Not a substitute for the nose boop, then. Just an added bonus. A cherry on top. A fitting penultimate moment. Claire braced herself, squeezing her eyes closed. But the touch didn't come, and when she could no longer hold her breath, she cracked open her eyes to see the Reaper with her finger still poised. It ticked back and forth, the motion like the swing of a woman's hips, like the swing of a clock pendulum, hypnotizing. A sound accompanied it, a human sound without the rattling breath of death or the hollow mourning wail of ghosts, just the ticking of a tongue against teeth. Ch-ch-ch. The hand lowered, folding back into its sleeve. Claire gaped, then burst as the last vestiges of her sanity collapsed, smoldered, and disintegrated around her.
What?
I'm not helping you. And now the Reaper was speaking to her. She'd never heard of the Reaper speaking before.
What?
Just no, the Reaper said. I'm not going to put up with being used like that.
I wasn't. I was just...
I'm not coming for you for years, so don't do anything stupid. The Reaper vanished. Claire's hands were shaking. She pressed them back to her cheeks, feeling the sting on the left and reassuring herself that it had happened.
It wasn't going to work.
Just trying would make things even worse for herself.
After a moment, she bent down and retrieved her phone. Her clarity of purpose had shifted with the slap. She still had tunnel vision, but she'd stumbled into a different tunnel. She'd cover the graffiti with a sheet and sweep up the glass and go inside and call her insurance agent. The 20% True podcast was written and produced by me, Carolyn Rahman. If you liked the show, please consider rating or subscribing on iTunes. It helps new people find the show. Visit the website 20percenttrue.blogspot.com for updates, thoughts on writing, and book reviews. Or follow me on Twitter @CarrieAndTheHits.